The following content contains adult subject matter, including sensitive material, and is intended for adult consumption only. It may not be suitable for all audiences. Therefore, discretion is advised.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Down. We're breaking down. We still are at it. There's still things to break, and I'm still down. I'm feeling pretty good. Today's episode is a fun one. I have on, I recently discovered this comedian, totally love her, Leslie Liao, super funny. And her story of popping off in comedy is a really inspiring one. You ever work at a company and then get a special for that company? Yeah, pretty cool. Leslie was doing HR at Netflix and then got a 10-minute Netflix set and that's what happens now that I live in it. And she got a Netflix thing and she was doing, it's really fun and it's inspiring and it's so cool. And I love talking to her. Comedy heavy episode in terms of kind of becoming a stand-up and what that looks like. And I really hope you enjoy the episode. I missed you guys.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Leslie Liao, stand-up comedian. I first saw you perform at Totally Comedy Club.
Oh, Bar Lubitsch. Yeah.
And you, I'm sure, know this as a comedian, but you will once in a while see someone where you're oh, no. They're really, really funny.
And once in a while, yeah.
No,
once
it's true. Yeah. People are good, but I'm not so whatever.
Everyone's good.
Yeah, you're doing it for a living or it's your main thing, then people, yeah, I'm okay, I get it. You know, I get that people, but I saw you and it was I really want to be your friend.
Oh, that's very nice.
I was you're so funny. It really hit me. I think I I followed you. I might have even messaged you. It was one of those things.
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Yeah, tell me.
I remember the moment we met. Mm. If you don't remember, no offense taken. We all meet too many people. It's fine. We met at a show at West Side Theater in Santa Monica.
Yeah. I thought we met at Bar Lubitsch.
So we probably did there and said hi, whatever. But at West Side, there's always very great lineups. You always run into people. But it was maybe one of our first shows together.
Yeah.
At the West Side Green Room.
Was I nice?
You were very nice. So this is what happened when we met. You had your set, and if you're in the green room at West Side, you can't really hear the comic set, but mm-hmm. you can hear the laughter of the crowd. Mm-hmm. You are in the green room, and you have to socialize with the other comics because that's how the room is. You have no choice.
Yeah,
I'm talking it's a trap, but you have no choice but to socialize.
It is a tiny little box, and you don't hang out anywhere else because it's just the room.
It's just the room. If you want to watch a comic, you have to physically exit the green room and watch with the crowd.
Yeah,
so. I heard you from the green room doing very well. Mm-hmm. the audience was laughing. And then you came back to the green room and you did what all of us do. We go, yeah, it was okay. You kind of was nah.
Yeah.
Downplayed it.
Yeah.
And I go, isn't that funny? I was like, Ali, I heard people laughing.
Yeah.
I heard people laughing throughout.
Yeah.
You had a good set.
Yeah.
Why can't you just admit it? Why do we all beat ourselves up
mm-hmm.
and praise other people?
Yeah.
And you looked at me, you go, I'm following you right now. And you pulled up my Instagram that moment.
Really?
And followed me on the spot. Because I just said something a little more insightful maybe than other people.
Yeah.
I was like, you need to congratulate yourself because you had a good set.
Whoa.
And you were like, what's your name? Leslie.
Oh my God.
You followed me on the spot.
That's such a good…
That's what I remember.
Comedians don't go to that. They don't say that to each other.
No. And I just felt saying it to you. Because I was stop. Stop. Just admit that you had a good set. It's okay.
Oh, thank you.
You know?
I'm going to follow you.
I know. Follow me again.
That's so nice of you. But when I must have left after you hadn't gone up yet, yeah?
Probably not.
It's like, you ever have the experience, you meet someone in a green room, you like them, but you like need to see them on stage to see like how you feel about them. Cause it's like, oh, you're so nice, but like, you really shouldn't do this.
The set is the determining factor.
Yeah.
I've noticed that with comics. It's like, we have to respect each other's comedy.
Yeah. Cause it's tough.
And then we can be friends.
Yeah.
That's the true thing.
Yeah.
And that's how I try to make friends in comedy. It's like, I want you to see me and be like, okay, she's good. And then like, that's how I make actual friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the real thing.
You were so, I remember seeing you live at Bar Lubitsch and like, just so fucking funny. I love your delivery and like, you're just smart.
Oh, thanks.
You're really smart.
I think you are too.
Oh, thank you.
I see the smarts in the writing.
Thank you. Thank you. Your stuff about, I've sent to everyone. We'll talk about like your Netflix story because it's so interesting and inspiring
Wild.
Probably for a lot of people. But your bit about I'm attracted to men, but I don't find men attractive.
Yeah.
Are people always like bringing that bit up to you as just like such a good point? Because I can't get over that.
I think they are. And I'm like, I'm fine with it. Like they bring it up. And I think with that joke, I love that one because that's something I said to a girlfriend at a bar.
Yeah.
It wasn't one that I sat there with a notebook and I was like, what's the premise? It was
right.
Just like, I was at a bar with girlfriends, single at the time. And like, you know the thing where you go to a bar and you're like, do you see anyone cute?
Yeah.
You know, like people go to bar to scope people out.
Sure.
I like never do that.
Yeah.
I don't think about the people at the bar. I'm like, I'm here because I want to be here. I'm not there to be seen. I'm like, I just want to see my friend, whatever. And I think my girlfriend was like, any cute guys? And I was like, guys aren't cute. What are you talking about? Like, I don't think guys are cute. And then they laughed. And I think I said the line, like, they're not attractive. Like,
yeah.
Guys aren't attractive to look at. What am I looking at? And then we looked around and laughed.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how real that was to most women.
So, like, I came up against that as a lesbian, though, which confused me because I felt that way. And then I was like, but that's how straight people feel.
That's how straight. Many straight women, I guess, are lesbians.
So,
or what? I don't
like,
know.
You know what I mean? Like, so, like, at what point am I then like, well, then I'm a lesbian? Because that was the feedback I kept getting from my straight friends. I'd be like, but do you think they're hot? And they're like, no.
No.
And then the other thing is, like, you start, like, when you start having sex, most women, like, feedback on, like, initial sexual experiences, like, they're not deeply pleasurable. It, like, and you're like, well, I didn't like that either. And they're like, no, you don't like it.
Right.
Like, you have to teach them. So I'm like, okay, you're not attracted to them. Sex isn't good unless you, like, tutorial it. So, like,
yeah.
So it's really then hard to then be like, well, I'm a lesbian because my experience just tracks as the average straight woman's.
You have every right to critique us. Because nothing we do makes sense.
Yeah.
I still am shocked.
That you're straight.
That I'm straight. I'm shocked.
Have you tried to be gay?
No. I haven't tried.
Has it occurred to you?
Thoughts have occurred.
I'm like, are you gay?
I have actually been heckled once at a show by a woman who's like, maybe you're gay. Like, because there was a point in my stand-up where like every joke was about like being straight. It sucks. Like men, ew, whatever. And
yeah,
some woman was like, you might be gay. I was like, maybe. I was like, thank you. That was actually very kind.
Right.
I haven't tried. I haven't actively went on a date with a woman or tried or whatever. And I'm not opposed to it. I just like, maybe I was just like raised to be straight.
You might just be straight.
I might just be straight. And I am resigned to it.
And that's okay too. I actually think that's probably better than like, I do see a lot of like, I think straight women that have like lost hope than being like, well, maybe I'm bi. It's like, I think you're just straight
also,
and unhappy.
Like, isn't it a little, I'm thinking out loud here.
Please think
little,
out loud on this
a little,
podcast.
May I say a thought
like,
on this podcast?
Should we just like shoot from the hip
do
on
you
this
Do you want to just say shit?
Should we just like say stuff?
Isn't it a little rude for someone to be like, maybe I should just try being gay because it's an actual like way to live. Like it, like the same way that a guy will be like, maybe I should just try stand up. I was like, oh, you want to just try it?
Yeah.
You want to just try it? It's an actual way. It's a lifestyle.
I would agree with that.
It's not a hobby.
And also, isn't it a little bit conceited to be like, well, men might be the problem?
No. Yes. Yes.
Like, Isn't it just you?
Yes. Which
maybe,
I did.
Maybe, but like, isn't that me hating women? No, yes. I don't hate them.
But which I did get nervous about when I kept writing about stuff of like, ew, men suck. I'm like, Leslie, you can't be like an angel. But I agree with that.
Your
like,
skin's perfect.
Thank you.
So perfect.
Wait, thank you. I put on makeup. Also, the lighting is great.
No, it's not the light. You're like,
are you sure?
Why is your complexion perfect, wrinkle-free?
No, no. It's a lot of. I did wash my face.
Yeah.
This morning, and I did enough makeup to because I sustain. You know, be presentable.
Yeah.
But I also shockingly use a lot of drugstore things.
Really?
Proudly.
Do you use oil? I know if you're listening, this is why you should watch the video on Spotify.
Not I don't glow. Use oil based like serums. Yeah. Maybe I do use oil based serums. Do you use oil?
Yeah, I do. I use multi-peptide serum.
Okay.
I use vitamin C.
You said it like it's a bad little secret.
I use a multi-peptide serum. I use vitamin C serum.
Me too.
Hyaluronic acid.
Yes, we must.
We must.
We must.
I do. I'm always trying new stuff. I had a breakout about 2 months ago that I'm still recovering from.
Like breakout meaning like one pimple?
No. It was just like,
oh, no.
I was traveling a lot.
Yeah, dude.
And then that like kind of fucked with my face.
It always fucks with it. Yeah.
Can you believe that men like don't even like cover up anything? Speaking of straight men, like,
so
what is that? Like, put something on.
So I think they could. I wouldn't fault a guy for like wearing concealer or like a tinted sunscreen.
You wouldn't?
I mean, there's a like,
I'm the most homophobic gay person. I'm like, gay. That's fucking gay.
But I get it. Like, if you have stuff to cover up, I don't want to make them feel bad about putting in any type of effort. I guess that's what I mean.
Oh.
Like, it's okay to put in effort.
I know. Why won't they? Like, why won't you guys just,
like— Because they've proved that they don't have to. They can get a job without it.
They really
can. They can rule the world without it. They can get a wife without it.
I know.
They've proved that, like, I don't need to. But I think they prove the fact of skincare that, like, you can actually overdo it and cause your own breakout. Like mixing too many ingredients, over exfoliating.
Isn't that a metaphor for life?
And that's the metaphor for life. All you have to do is just sleep and love yourself.
Water.
Water.
Drink water.
And I
believe in God.
I think and I think water actually is water and sleep is the key.
It is the key.
That's what I learned from a lot of YouTube people.
Yeah. It is amazing how low the bar is for men. And like, I don't mean to be a man-hating lesbian. Like most of my friends, I actually have a lot of male friends. I just like don't.
Straight male?
Straight male.
Yeah.
I do. But like, you know Jack Fink?
Oh, love Jack Fink.
Okay, love Jack Fink.
Yeah.
He's one of my really good friends.
Yeah.
I went over to his house yesterday.
He's like a rainbow.
He's
But not gay.
We hate gay people. But not fucking gay or anything like that. I did go over to his house yesterday because I am in a book club that he started. And he,
That's adorable.
If you want to be in that book club, you're welcome to. And you can also say no politely in the air. But he like hosts at his house. And I walked into his house. He had music playing. He made quiche.
It's adorable.
He was adorable. Showered. He has plants in his house that he waters. He has art hanging on the wall. And I was like, oh my God. Like, you're like the most, like, I don't
the
know.
The most gay, straight guy.
But I was just like, you're just like an adult. Like, I don't know men. Like, his house is decorated. Like, why am I so blown away by that?
I guess being straight, they don't care about the details. That's got to be it.
Because
gay people, like, are put together and they care about details. Like a little, everything matches.
Who cares about that? Gay men?
Gay people, maybe.
Gay people?
They care about details.
But isn't it women also care about that?
No, that's true. Women care about details.
Isn't it just not straight men?
It's
everyone but straight men.
Yeah, it's everyone but straight men.
Can you imagine if we're like, you know who cares about the details? Trans people. Trans people love details.
They might like details too.
Yeah, but like it is like amazing that it's just like a little bit of like spatial awareness. And attention to detail makes you so desirable.
And it makes you so, like, the fact that you mentioned just because Jack was showered, you did include that as a detail. Like, he took a shower. I'm like, are you gay? Like, why does that make him maybe
gay? He did. He, like, smelled good. And I was just like, why are most of my interactions with men, and then always men comment,
you're hanging out with the wrong men.
And it's like,
No, you're not.
I've like seen like
Jack is lovely.
I've seen all you guys. Like, you don't cook. No. You don't really look clean most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, what do you need to do? Shower and like water a plant?
I don't know what it is that, what else are they focusing on that makes them forget about?
What are they focusing on?
Getting it in. I don't know.
But getting
ahead.
But that stuff gets you the stuff you
want.
So it's so weird. It's like if you guys really want to like fuck, like buy a plant.
Or maybe it's making money. Maybe they stress about like having the desirable job. It could be that.
It could be that they're focused. We're giving them such benefit of the doubt that they're reasons they're not showering. They want to make money.
I know.
You know why they don't shower? They really want to climb
like,
the
ladder. Cut straight men some slack. Like
we're like
so
we put
stressed.
Serums on our faces. It's like we're worried about it too. Okay, this brings me to your career, which is like crazy loco.
It is loco.
It reminds me of, you know, I'm not going to make it about me, but I'll make it about me.
Do
after.
It. It's your podcast.
No, well, it's not my place.
It's your place.
A woman on her own podcast.
You're like apologizing about talking.
I don't want to like relate this back to me.
It's not about me.
But
it's your podcast.
Set the stage for your Netflix trajectory. It's tickling.
My life. So, you know, my day job. I had a day job.
No longer.
No longer. I am a month out of my day job.
Just a month?
Just like a month-ish.
Bam, bam, bam.
So I love my new life. I get to wake up and do a podcast, you know, and do a fancy podcast, have shows at night.
Performing anywhere tonight?
Tonight I'm actually doing like a cute little, one of those private shows at like a fancy bungalow apartment in West Hollywood. It's like
not familiar with those.
Yeah, it's not like a comedy club.
It's like a private bungalow show.
You know when like Soho House might have like a random, it's like one of those things, I think.
Yeah, fun.
But I did have a day job at Netflix for 6 years. And the entire time I worked there, I did stand up. So I had a fully double life.
Is that when you started?
When I started. Yeah. I started stand up the same year I started that day job.
Okay.
So
Six years ago.
So I tortured myself with that schedule. And I don't know if you've ever had a day, like a corporate.
Yeah, I did.
So.
The Onion.
Oh, right. And while doing stand-up. So it's the worst.
Yeah.
Because you're working every moment of your life.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
And even though the shows are at night, they physically don't interfere with my, you know, cushy little day job. Like mentally, your brain is running on near empty by the time you're getting ready for the show. So just every day for 6 years, I was just like operating on nothing and just pushing myself to do the show. It was the worst.
So even when you're starting 6 years ago, were you always dreaming of stand-up? Were you thinking about it? Like, how did you get to the place where you're like, can I ask how old you are?
I am 30, about to turn 37.
Oh, whoa.
March 11.
You were way younger. You're so old.
Thank you. Thank you.
But 37. Okay, so you start at like 30.
I started at 30.
Okay, yeah. So is this something you're like always thinking about doing? How does this come into your… And you went to USC. I know that, right?
I went to USC, yeah. I went to USC film school.
Okay, I went to film school too.
Oh my God. We're film school nerds.
Yeah.
It was nice.
USC film.
Yeah.
Okay, you're in it. That's a great fucking film school.
It's a good film school.
That's the film school other than my film school.
Where did you go?
Tisch.
Oh, Tisch is good, right?
Tisch and USC.
look at us.
We should make a movie together or something like that.
We could.
We should. We'll talk about it.
We'll sidebar about it.
Yeah.
But wanting to do stand-up was a tiny thought in my brain.
Yes.
That existed in the back of my brain my entire life. And grew and grew and grew and popped at age 29. So I went to film school because I wanted to be a film exec. I wanted to run a film studio.
Yeah.
And I wanted to produce really cool comedy movies. And like I wanted to work with cool directors. And
comedy though. You want to make comedy.
Yeah.
What sort of stuff are you watching growing up that you're like, this is my jam?
I mean, honestly, like just the Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler.
Okay.
Austin Powers is like one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, baby.
Big, silly.
Yeah.
Big, fun, silly, memorable, happy.
Yeah.
Something that you're like, I'll watch that 1,000 times.
Yes.
So that was my vibe. So I went to film school. I worked as a Hollywood assistant for years.
Brutal.
I worked at Universal Studios. Like I had a terrible, I hated it.
What did you do there?
Well, I loved my boss at the time, but like I read a lot of awful scripts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very slow reader.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these Hollywood people, they can read scripts in minutes. They can read a script while they're on the phone, like multitask, read a script and be like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can read a script and be like, that's good writing. Call that agent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a change of heart at age 29. That I no longer wanted to be a film exec, that I wanted to do stand-up. So then I got an offer at Netflix.
How do you even think of that? What are you talking about? Are you watching stand-up?
Oh, I'm sorry. So
Who says that? So, I want to do you're a fan of stand-up then.
Well, you said that obviously at some point in your life.
Yeah, but I was watching stand-up. Like, so you're doing this job. Are you like having like some secret stand-up obsession?
I had a full-on stand-up obsession.
Okay, okay, there
and
we go.
For the producing job at Universal, we produced comedies.
Okay.
So part of my, you know, offering to this job was like, let me go to stand-up shows and
there
I'm gonna
it is.
And I'm gonna find
that's where you got infected.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna find because this is when like Trainwreck came out, the Amy Schumer movie.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, I'm gonna find the next one. I'll find the next, you know, person we could have like a movie, whatever. Yeah.
They're like, please just get the coffee.
They literally were like, none of us are asking you to do this.
Right.
You need to stay at the desk, honey.
Right.
You're an assistant. I was like, I'll find the next Amy, don't you worry.
They're like Leslie's crazy.
They're like, please stay at the desk, little assistant girl. So I went to shows every night in LA.
I fucking love that you just took that upon yourself.
Yeah. And I was like thinking I was showing initiative. No one asked for it.
No, but you were. That's like the best. Just fucking grab that shit that you want to do.
And it was so invigorating. I was like, and it made me love my job because I got to watch stand-up every night. And, you know, in LA, if you go to the right clubs, you just see good shows.
Yeah.
Like you see good shows. And I was like so happy that I lived in LA and I got to watch stand-up. In the back of my mind, I was like, I could do that, but maybe, you know, maybe I could do that. But the first time the thought popped of Leslie, you can and should do stand-up mm-hmm. was when I saw my first bad stand-up show.
Mm.
And it was bad.
They like, ate shit.
It was at the Improv, but
it was Brittany Schmidt.
It was Brittany Schmidt inspired me. But it was a lot of men.
Yeah.
There was a lot of men on the lineup.
Yep.
And it was a very bad show. And I had never experienced that because I'd never gone to open mics.
Oh, it was an open mic.
It wasn't an open mic.
It was a book show.
It was a, you know, like a stand-up writing class. And it wasn't the one that I took with Brit, but it was
a graduating
class.
I love those.
You know, so it wasn't meant to be good.
Yeah.
It was everyone's first time.
Right.
So I remember.
But why were you attending that?
A friend invited me because his friend was in it.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I love stand-up. Like, I'll go with you, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was so bad that I had a visceral, violent reaction. And I was so offended that it was like having a really bad meal. Like you're like, pah, like, what? You put this on a plate for what? I paid for this? It was like that. So I felt, then I felt the urge of like, oh, if they're doing it.
Then I can do it.
Then we can do it.
Okay.
So then it became real. And then I, in the same year, started at Netflix because that job I had was very, there was a work-life balance.
Yeah.
Like you were done at 5.
Yes.
Done at 5 so I could make it to the open mic at 6.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
And you're doing open mics.
I was doing open mics every night.
And are you writing? Are you writing or are you going on stage with ideas and just seeing what comes out?
It was mostly writing in that class because
mm-hmm.
because writing is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
When do you find the time, especially with a day job?
Mm-hmm.
So the class, it forced me to be on the schedule. And like, you would have to meet with the other comics twice a week and you had to show up with stuff. So I'm like, if I'm paying for this class and showing up with ideas, like I would write, pull all-nighters till midnight. I'd write on Sundays, the weekends.
Yeah.
Not see friends.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not date.
Yeah.
So it was like, every waking moment outside of the day job was writing and doing shows.
Right. So open mics, like I think I've talked about comedy before, obviously on this podcast, but just like to be super clear, open mics, you go, you can like usually pay $5 or sometimes it's mm-hmm. free and you like do your material. And then there's kind of this other like tiered like entry to stand up, which is the Bringer Show. And I don't even know what the Bringer Shows are like in LA because I came up in New York.
Right.
But the Bringer Show is you bring a certain amount of people and then you get your time because of that.
Yeah.
So were you doing that?
I did those.
Also? And that's like really tough because you like kind of burn out your friends because you're not that good at that point in time, but you need them to come see you. And then by the time you're good, they're like, what the fuck's going on? So you're doing that.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah.
I did the Bringer Shows in LA.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't know what they were because
right.
I was so new to stand-up. Like, I had no comic friends.
Yeah.
So I still thought Bringer Shows were awesome. I thought they were just another show. And they were at the Comedy Store, which is a legit venue.
Well, that's actually awesome. And also, it's better to be blind because then you don't know the hell you're entering.
Yes. So in my mind, I was like, I'm doing the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And my friends also thought that was cool. So they all came.
Cool.
I mean, it's cool. And it was a Friday night. So they were like, we'll go to the Comedy Store on a Friday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
And, you know, rub shoulders with Marc Maron and whatever.
Yeah.
So they came to those shows and it was exactly that. The currency was bringing my friends mm-hmm. and that allowed me a better slot in the show.
Right.
So I got the prime time right in the middle and there were like 30 comics on these bringer shows.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go at the end
yeah.
of these shows. So I, right. yeah, I did those. And as you said, at the time, my friends were like, this is amazing. My friend does stand up.
Yeah.
How fun. And then after three bringer shows, they were like,
we
are no longer friends. Please yeah. stop inviting me. I can't hear this same joke. Like they,
right.
So
right.
they are good friends though.
And when does it turn that you're doing the, so you're doing the open mics, you're doing bringers, you started this new Netflix job. So you're working a day job, doing stand up, writing like in the time in between. When do you feel like, okay, I can really like maybe make something here? And also I read something, I think it might've been your Deadline piece about when you were at Netflix, avoiding, and this is so fucking smart, like avoiding meeting Robbie Prah or like interfacing with these bigger like wigs at Netflix because, and Robbie Prah orders a lot of the comedy. I think he's the president or VP of special.
He's like the head of the whole stand-up programming.
Because you don't want these people to know you as like a Netflix like HR person or whatever it is, because people have a hard time, I think, of like, and this is just in any career, like reassigning you what it is you do.
Yes.
You know, like
yes.
if I'm in his head as like, someone who does this weird HR thing at Netflix, why would he then allow me to like, whatever. And it's not specific to him.
I
it's just people in general.
Yeah. That's how I think too.
You know?
Like I was terrified of him ever meeting me as an employee.
Yeah.
And being, and anyone telling him like, she does stand up too, you know?
Yeah.
And him being, he would have been like, ew. Like if I ever.
Yeah, it is. It's like icky.
It's ew.
Yeah.
Like if I ever, and I was in the elevator with him so many times and never introduced myself.
Yeah.
I just shut the fuck up and
yeah.
I just looked at my phone.
Yeah.
I was never going to be like, you know, I also dabble. He would have been like, I should have been, if I ever did that to him, that's grounds for firing. Like they have every right to be like, that's inappropriate. Like,
right. Right.
Leave the building.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, okay. So you're doing that stuff. When does it turn a bit? When do you get like some momentum there?
Dude, post-pandemic.
Post-pandemic.
So
okay.
Right before the pandemic, I felt like I was getting momentum in the form of booking consistent shows.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, starting in LA, you probably have the idea of like shows meant like a bar show, like a show at a coffee shop. They weren't like main room improv shows, but they were shows with an audience and a lineup and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like my schedule was packed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, okay, like every other night I have a show, which for someone new is cool.
Yes.
Is good.
Yes. I think it's so confusing when you start stand up, like how to like get anywhere. Just like, and I think it really is because people are always saying The Hang. Like I never really did The Hang, I'm going to be honest. But I think if you're like funny enough, people will just be like, come to my show.
That's what
kind
worked
of.
For me. I
yeah.
never believed in The Hang. I like hanging out with comics after show, but like I never saw that as a way to get in.
Yeah.
Like I always got booked on shows because someone saw your set and said, good set, want to do my show?
Yeah.
It was as simple as that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, she's funny in the green room, want to do my show. It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
So,
you're in the green room telling people to believe in themselves.
That's what I was in the green room like, you're good enough, Allie.
Acknowledge it, Allie. Yeah. Celebrate
like,
yourself.
Love yourself, babe. That's what I am. Before the pandemic, I felt like I had momentum in the form of getting shows.
Yeah.
But I had no credits.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had, you know, no writing thing. I wasn't passed at any club.
Okay. I like can't believe I've never talked. I feel like my listeners are like, what do you mean credit? Like even just the idea of like, if you're on late night, that's your credit.
Great credit.
So then they bring you up and they're like, you singer on the fucking blah, blah, blah. And then the other thing is like getting passed. I know I must have talked about this years ago
yeah.
on the show, but like you will audition for these clubs and the booker will pass you. Pass, by the way, is like the most negative word for like the most positive thing in comedy. Pass usually sounds like it's
fail.
Like you're a no.
Yeah.
But like if you're passed, then you're like on the roster of like the house comics at
you're
the improv,
in.
The house comics at the Comedy Store. And then getting booked is another story because you could be passed at all these clubs and then they don't book you.
Fuck, that's
ever have
real.
That happen?
Dude, that's real.
All the time.
You can be on the list, but never on the
right.
lineup.
So
yeah.
wait, you say you got passed?
So pre-pandemic, I was passed nowhere. Like
passed
pre-pandemic,
nowhere. Right.
I felt like a nobody in LA because I didn't
well,
have—
4 years doing comedy is like
Yeah, yeah. It's nothing.
You know, that's
it's
like—
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not. It's moments.
Yeah.
But post-pandemic, once everything was back, I threw myself right back in it.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to do this again. Like, I had this itch. So I went up and I built the momentum again by going to mics every night again. And in that sense, the hang helps of showing your face at these clubs and mm-hmm. mics and doing a good set mm-hmm. and reminding people I'm around and I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm available. So like then from mics, I'd get booked. And then, yeah, like shortly after the pandemic, I honestly, getting passed at the West Side Club in Santa Monica was a huge deal for me mm-hmm. as an LA comic because those lineups are great. Mm-hmm. They're great.
Like it's a great room.
It's a great room.
Chris Gorbos books it.
We love Chris Gorbos. Yeah. Because he was the first person in LA who was like, hey, you're really good. What's your email?
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Also funny comic. Shout out to the West Side Club if you're in LA.
Good club.
Go there. Look at the lineups. It's the same lineups. Those are all touring headlining comedians.
Yeah. And I do think the West Side doesn't have, like, that's the one beacon of, like, comedy on the West mm-hmm. Side. You know, it's East Side, a lot of shows.
I know.
But he's great. Okay, so you get past there, and that feels, like, really affirming.
And that's where, like, you know the first time, I don't know when this happened for you, maybe in New York, mm-hmm. where you were on a lineup, and you saw the lineup of comics, and you were like, what the fuck am I doing on this lineup?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm fans of these people.
I know. Frantic. Aaron Burr's show. I remember it at the
stand.
Like 10 years ago. I couldn't believe it. It was like Dave Attell. I was blown. It was nuts.
And did you find yourself like, did you meet the moment of like, yeah, I belong here? Or were you more like, oh my God, why am I here?
I was still faking it. I don't think I feel like I've never felt like I belong.
Me too.
I'll never feel that way. Yeah. But it's good for me. Yeah.
Me too. Like at West Side, every show I was like, what the fuck am I doing on this? I was like, that's Lori Kilmartin.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Like she looked at me. Like so I couldn't believe, like that was like, I made it.
I have those moments every night.
I know.
They never go away for me.
Even if I had
it the other night. Annie Letterman, who's like my friend now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like truly my friend. I text her. If I'm on a show with her, I'm just like, hi.
So she's like, funny. Hi, Ali, are you mad at me?
You're Lisa
like,
oh. Traeger, one of my best friends now. I looked up to her for so long. Bonnie McFarlane. I can't believe that I know these
like
people.
Lisa, I love her.
Yeah.
And I did one of those like Netflix is a joke. Are you still listening? The radio show. Yeah. It's like a really cool Netflix LA show.
Yeah.
And she was hosting and I did it. And I like couldn't even look at her.
Yeah.
And she's just like, oh, you're so funny. And I was like, what? Like, so.
Yeah, I can't handle it.
It's in LA as a comic, I guess I get starstruck, like I'm like fans of these people. Mm-hmm. So at West Side, that was a huge one for me. And that's where I met a lot of these legit working comics who were like in it.
Yeah.
And that's where I met comics who booked me on their cool shows.
Right.
And I felt more plugged in. And that's, I think, yeah, like that is what led to just meeting other cool comics who were regulars at all the cool LA places. And then it just built from there.
Right.
But
And then you get, what is it that you get that, is it JFL or, you had a Netflix?
Yeah, I had a Netflix, it was like a 10-minute little.
Was that a part of the Robbie Hoffman one? No.
That was hers, yes.
Okay.
She did that same one.
Because it was you, who else was on that? I know it was you and Robbie.
Asif Ali.
Yeah.
Sabrina Wu.
Sabrina.
Rosebud Baker.
Right, okay, so yes.
Great lineup.
So when you get that, you're still at Netflix?
I was physically at the office when they called me about.
Do they know you work for Netflix?
So yes, there is. There are two employees on the Netflix stand-up team that knew me from being an employee.
Yeah.
They knew that I dabbled in stand-up.
Yeah.
But they didn't know how for real I was.
Yeah.
Because everyone in LA has a.
Everyone has
a side thing.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, sure, you do stand-up, whatever. But they didn't realize that I'm like really in it and trying. So they knew I did stand up and I wasn't friends with them. One of them actually I hired and she's since worked on the stand up team and she knew I did stand up but didn't realize how whatever. Mm-hmm. So my Hollywood manager, you know, got me that thing. Basically was like maybe pitching me or whatever. And then when they reminded the Netflix team like, "Oh yeah, I actually have a client, Leslie Liao. She does stand up. You might know her. Mm-hmm. She's a colleague of yours." And they were like, "What?" They like looked me up in like the Netflix employee page like, wait, is this the one I'm thinking of? I met her years ago, Leslie Liao. And they looked me up in like in the Netflix like you know, employee database. And they were like, no fucking way.
Yeah.
And then they saw me live and they looked me up and they were like, oh shit, what? Like, she's actually still in it? Like,
yeah. Because at that point, you have a social following that they're like, oh, you have a real thing.
It was slowly growing.
Okay.
At that point.
But they're like, you're really pursuing this.
They were like, oh, she's for real about this.
Yeah.
Like, very for real about this. And I was physically, when my reps called me and said, hey, they want to have you do this, I was at the Netflix office in between meetings.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer their call because I was in a meeting.
Yeah.
In a probably very dumb meeting.
Yeah.
In a dumb meeting with one person talking about nothing.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was like, I'm a busy Netflix exec. And I remember ignoring their call.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's important when they text you.
Yeah.
And they're like,
the manager.
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The manager's like, hey, give us a call.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? What happened?
I know. I'm like, I got canceled or
I got
something good.
You're like, it's either something awesome or bad.
Yeah.
So I was at Netflix and I filmed it while being an employee and took off a couple days. I am psycho. You heard it here. I'm
no, but it's amazing. Like that is no, not you. The circumstance is like.
I think I am, but yes,
you're psycho.
Everything is psycho.
You're crazy.
Everything is psycho.
So
you have
and is everyone now at the office like? Wah-duh!
After the special, yes. After word got out that Netflix did the special and that I did that,
yeah.
People were like, "Oh my god, it's not a hobby." Like, you're, like, really…
A stand-up.
I'm like, yeah, it's not a freaking hobby.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not doing it because it's fun. I'm not doing it because
no
it's,
No one's
like,
doing this because we like it.
I'm not doing it because it's making me money.
Yeah.
Trust me. Like, I'm whatever. And then… but the big thing that colleagues freaked out about was Fallon.
Mm.
Which you did it… Did you do it once or twice? Or
twice,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So…
When did you do that? Recently.
October.
Yeah. Congratulations.
So, thanks. And you too.
It's, isn't that like,
it's great.
That's the biggest, shiniest thing.
And like, isn't that like when you did it, you notice how impactful, like people come out of the woodwork to tell you congrats on Fallon.
It's just such an iconic show.
Yeah.
Like you think about like, I mean, obviously the show has changed, but like the roots of that show, the fact that that was like, that
legendary.
Was Johnny Carson.
I know.
You know, and that sort of show, when you would go on that as a stand-up when Johnny Carson was hosting The Tonight Show, that would change your life.
I know.
And it's really not that it, like, it has a different impact on culture today,
it's
obviously. But to have that credit feels like the most substantive credit you can have as a stand-up.
Mm-hmm. It's magical.
It's so funny, like, the things that pop people off. Like, I think about now. What feels like maybe going on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson today is probably going on Joe Rogan.
I know. Seriously, it's different. Like that could change your life.
The Tonight Show is so entrenched in history that to have that, it's just timeless.
Mm-hmm.
But it is funny that it's like, well, that is really what will move tickets in a way that I think like other, like late night, it's just funny how the scene has changed.
There's different… Different people watch different things, and I forgot about that because I don't have cable anymore.
Yeah.
So The Tonight Show means something different to me now.
Right.
I used to watch it every night when I was a kid, had a cable, whatever.
Yeah.
So I forgot how impactful it is because, like, when I did The Tonight Show, like, so many people were like, that's when people said congratulations.
Yeah.
They were like, oh my God, you did, like, the Fallon Show, whatever.
Yeah,
and that's
it's
what
so real.
Colleagues at Netflix, like, I saw you on The Tonight Show. I was like, you watched The Tonight… Like… Because I just forget. Other people have cable. Other people love different things. And like, to me, the equivalent of The Tonight Show is like a don't tell comedy set. Because I'm a dorky comic in LA. To me, that's a really big deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, if you're a stand-up head, you know don't tell. If you're not, you don't.
Right. So Tonight Show, Just for Laughs, Netflix, this…
That was all last year.
What the were you like, what the fuck?
I was what the fuck every day.
Right.
Every day I would laugh and say, what the fuck? Like backstage at Fallon, I was like, what the fuck am
I doing
here?
What do you think people are responding to?
I don't know.
You have no idea.
I don't know.
I mean, you're so fucking funny, but can you just imagine, can you imagine this happening? I just can't imagine it all happening in 1 year.
It was 1 year.
Like that's just so crazy,
and
the timing of that.
I really, last year was like, comically things happened. And I even like at moments would ask my reps, like my managers, like, is this normal? Is this normal to happen?
No.
They're like, nah.
No.
We would all laugh together. Like every time we got something cool, they'd be like, yeah, we're doing this. I'm like, okay.
That's
like
insane.
So
and then you get to leave your day job.
And then I finally get to leave the day job. Cause it was just like, I just need money. So like now that I can sustain a type of a living, that's the only thing. Cause I would have stayed at Netflix.
Yeah. Are you touring or what is it that you're doing now?
I'm touring now. So now I have like, you know, the hour sets, headline
How
sets.
How is that
here
going? Cause you haven't been headlining for years and years.
No, I have not.
I started headlining 2 years ago and I still kind of hate it.
I mean, what do you,
I don't mean that I hate it. I'll just say I've been so used to like coming up in like club sets and 15-minute chunks that learning to do an hour and I don't feel perfect or great at it at all. Yeah. I feel comfortable with it now.
Yeah.
But I just think that's like a whole different thing that I'm getting used to. And it's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of feels like how I felt when I was learning to do like club sets of just like, okay, this is the pacing of that. And like how to do a through line. Like I'm just learning it in
it's
a different
like
way.
An hour is like, it's a different league. Is it like the Olympics versus like playing pickup ball on
right.
at like the park.
Right. So you're doing clubs, like you're headlining
clubs.
Like
the clubs, doing the hour, which is just like a different. So yes, I'm doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's happening very fast.
Yeah.
I feel like a total fraud because I haven't been doing it for years. And I actually did open for Britt Schmidt a couple times. Cause I never got to do the whole like, you know, feature for someone and see them do the hour and see them struggle.
Yeah.
And what traveling sucks. It's not because people see your tour schedule and they're like, wow.
You're so busy.
You're what a glamorous. And it's like, dude,
this is miserable.
10% of it is fun.
Yeah.
Most of it is being at the airport, losing sleep,
being at the worst hotel.
Praying that your room is ready.
Yeah.
On time.
Yeah.
Eating very shitty food.
Yeah.
Not doing your normal skincare routine.
Yeah.
Being alone in a city where you have no friends. Like, it's not. So, the part I like about it is like meeting people and figuring out new jokes and stuff. But otherwise, I feel like a fraud doing the hour because I don't have the. It's not done.
Right.
It's like a scrambly scratch paper thing of all the jokes I've ever written and what I think is interesting now. And I refuse to do anything I did in the Netflix set.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to not do stuff in the Don't Tell set.
The Netflix set, though, is like 10 minutes?
It's like 10 minutes.
You can you don't want to do it.
I personally don't want to do it.
Oh, yeah, because I guess if, like, I do agree with the people have this weird relationship with like burning material.
I know.
I feel like.
Yeah, what's your philosophy on it?
I mean, my thought is until I've put out a special,
mm-hmm.
I can use my material.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious what you think about like people putting out self-producing specials, putting out specials. Like for me, I'm like, I want to have a special when it's like a Netflix special or an HBO special. I don't want to just tape it and put it up. But like everyone does that and that seems to be how you get a special now. So like I should have a special at this point. Like, I don't mean like Netflix, I mean like I should
as
have an
a,
hour
as a
of
comic,
material.
You have something that you think is like, this is represents my style.
Yeah, I just feel like I've written enough things that like I want this to be a special, but like I don't know if self-producing, like how do you feel about that?
I am a very go big or go home.
Yeah.
Like so I'm like, if I'm gonna do a special and release it, I want it to be on like a sexy platform. Like I want it to be where if I say what it's on, I don't want to be like, I have a, you can find our special on 345.
On Stitch.
You know, yeah. Like on, you know, yeah. Quibi.net or whatever. Like, I want it to be on something that everyone's like, yes, I know what that is. But YouTube counts.
That's how I feel. But YouTube counts to that.
Because everyone knows YouTube. You can just say you can find it on YouTube.
Right.
So at least they know where to find it.
And what's happening now, though, is comics are putting specials on YouTube and then, like, other places are buying that or, like, sponsoring
that. I guess so, yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
So I do, for me personally, I'm go big or go home. Like, I want it to be on the thing where I don't want to have to explain how to find it.
Yes. I know. I totally agree with you.
That's all.
The way in which your story reminds me of my story, and it's not the same at all, but it's that, like, I was an intern at The Tonight Show when I was in college. And then
I didn't know that.
And then my first job out of college was a page at NBC.
Oh, my God.
So I was a Tonight Show desk page. So I would bring guests on the show to their dressing room and seat them, like, in the dressing room. And I would seat the audience. And then I left the page program to be at The Onion. And then, like, within a year, I did stand-up on The Tonight Show. And when I came back to do stand-up on The Tonight Show, everyone that I worked with at The Tonight Show was like, what the fuck? fuck, you're a guest. And so it was this like homecoming moment of like my coworkers seeing, and I was doing stand up when I was there, and I would tell a few people, but I was like, I didn't really want like lots of people to know.
Oh my God.
So it was really the same, it was mirrored in a lot of ways, you know? And I think there's something really like smart, not to toot my own horn, but like, hey, look, we did it.
No,
pursuing like a really traditional corporate avenue and also doing the creative thing. And that's not to discount people that do the creative thing and then pick up odd jobs, right? But I do think there's like something, if you can, about networking in that space and then pursuing the thing, because like if the worlds are able to connect, like it's supportive.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing if you can do it, but it's, of course, it's exhausting.
I think you did the same as me where like, you worked at The Tonight Show. You probably didn't keep it a secret that you did stand up.
No, the writers knew. I told them.
But you didn't mention it in every conversation you had. You probably did your job.
Yeah.
And then did stand up at night. And like, my coworkers did go see me do stand up.
Yeah.
Which maybe your coworkers did.
I remember when the stand up book, Tonight Show booker, stand up booker.
Was it the same one? No.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah.
He got that job. And I was a page. And I was like, asking him a million questions about what he booked and like da 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 da. And he ended up knowing I did stand up, but I was like, I'm not going to be on The Tonight Show. Like that was not, one day, but I was like, it's not going to happen anytime soon. But he is like, was so generous with me. And like, he is really just like invested in seeing stand up live. Like he cares so much about it. And he saw when I was auditioning for Just for Laughs. And he was like, you should showcase for Fallon. Because I had like a killer set at Just for Laughs. I didn't get Just for Laughs that year. And I've auditioned like 6 times until I got it. And then I showcased and Jimmy was there. And Michael was like—
Wait, where was that?
This was at the stand like 8 years ago.
Jimmy was there?
Yeah, I know. And he was like, dude, she used to intern for you. And like, it was a really cool moment, you know? Because it was cool that he saw me like that. That it wasn't like I was— You know, it was then, she even used to do that. It wasn't like there's this person that
he
wants
to. He saw you probably have a killer set.
Right.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah. So I totally get that and like not wanting to be,
Yeah. I there's a calmness in compartmentalizing the worlds for me.
Yeah.
Day job is I do my day job. I'm not cracking jokes. I mean, I was funny in the day because I just was kind of myself. But like, and at night you do the stand up.
We're like, we feel good if we put things in tiny boxes and lock them away. We disassociate.
I'm like, don't let them mix.
It's really good for our mental health to just put a key on my heart and lock it away. Yeah. I totally agree with you.
But like, I love Michael Cox. Like I had a great experience with him, but, that magical moment of like Jimmy seeing you do stand up.
Yeah.
Like you can't even imagine that would ever happen. But when I did Just for Laughs, the New Faces last year.
Which is like the biggest comedy festival. It's like a huge like badge of honor as a new face. They kind of, say.
In the comedy world, it's like the Oscars.
It's like the stand-up Oscars.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But to my parents, they're like, what is it? But that's where Robbie Prah of Netflix saw me do stand up.
Yeah.
So that's what all I could pray for.
Right.
Is that he would just see me have a good set. I didn't want him to see me in the elevators, in the hallways, in a conference room. Like, so he saw me have a great set there. And I was like, thank God. And then I met him after and I was like, this is how I wanted it to be.
Yeah. Do you have this sensation now of like you've gotten some of the things that you've always wanted and now it's like, okay, well, what's the next thing?
So the problem with me is, I never thought I would get any of this shit. Yeah. So there was no part of me that ever thought, for real, get Tonight Show, be on Netflix, New Faces, certainly not. In the back of my mind, I was like, I don't know, maybe if I tried hard enough, maybe I could get stuff.
Yeah.
But truly, like, doing stand-up in LA, all I wanted to have was a good set.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then I always want a good set. So I never thought beyond a good set. What it could lead to.
Yeah.
So I just didn't realize, and now when you're a stand-up, people think you can act. People think you can write. They want you to direct. They want you to host.
They do. They want you to direct. They want you to direct. Then no they want you to do a podcast. Do a goddamn thing.
No. They see you as like, oh, you can do all this stuff now.
Yeah.
And they want you to host things and be a guest on whatever. So I just forgot that they could, what stand-up can lead to, which is silly because a lot of my favorite stand-ups are in movies now and they write now and they're actors and.
Yeah.
But I mean, luckily for me, I just want to do stand up. I'm happy to do other stuff too. If people want, like voiceover, I'm down.
Oh, you'd be great at that.
Thank you. Because you can just sit down.
It's my dream too.
No memorizing lines.
Yeah.
You know, like you can just do. So I'm happy to do other stuff, but I just want to do stand up and then lay down. I want to do my skincare routine and do stand up.
Yeah. Are you dating now?
I have a boyfriend.
Shut the fuck up.
We didn't even talk about romance.
Wait, stop. Because I love your single dumb comedy.
I have so many single.
When did you get that?
So my when did you get that?
Like, I love your bit about you're like, when I finally get a boyfriend, I'm gonna be like a mom that's lost her kid at the grocery store.
Where the fuck were you, dude?
Totally get that.
So that
boyfriend?
Is a true. I have a boyfriend, fuck. An official boyfriend.
How long?
We made it official in November. And right now we're in March-ish.
Yeah, 4 months.
So it's only 4 months. But I think it moved fast because he is a 37, like, mature man. And I'm about to be 37. Mm-hmm. And we, at an age, you're just kind of like, I like you. There's no more beating around the bush.
Oh, 100%.
So it went faster than I…
Lesbian level.
It went lesbian level fast, which was like, you know what? I like this pace because
Let's not mess around.
It's like, you know what? You know yourself. I know myself. You like me? I like you. Let's just call it. Like, no more being cute. Like, and because I've dated a lot of guys before that who really were slow.
Yeah.
Like, they love to keep it casual.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't do casual.
Where'd you meet the guy?
Hinge, the dating app Hinge.
That's a popular one. People love it.
I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's a great one. But everyone uses it differently. But I wasn't looking for love. I just was on it. I've been on Hinge for frickin' 11 years.
Oh my God.
I mean,
Hinge, like, shuts down your profile.
Like, Hinge is like, are you a bot? Like, you're swiping so fast. Like, are you AI? Because you're swiping.
You a bot?
Because one time I got kicked off Instagram because, not kicked off, but they froze me because if they see you liking too many things too fast.
Oh, I've had that happen.
Yeah, they're like
you're, please calm down.
And I'm like, no, I'm just home. Like, I'm just.
It prompts you, goes, take some time.
Yeah, they're like.
I like get upset about that. That triggers me. I want to get. I'm like, what the fuck?
They're
don't
like,
tell
what's
me to
wrong?
Take time.
Because you're liking too much and looking at too many stories too fast.
Yeah.
So on Hinge, I was just like, maybe similar to my joke, I was like, where the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, not one guy I can vibe with. And I'm not like, where's the one? I'm special. Where I was more like an angry, like, seriously, dude.
Yeah.
Like, there's not one guy who thinks I'm cool.
Yeah.
And there's not one guy who I think is cool. So I remember being on Hinge one night and I remember liking his thing. And then we just messaged and he moved fast and
Thank
made
God,
it very
get off
easy.
The app.
I'm off of it. And he made it very easy.
No, I live when I'm like, when you message them, like, I don't want to like stay in messaging for a while on the app.
So have you been on apps? Are you?
I've never met someone off of an app, mm-hmm. But I've been on them. My girlfriend now I met from real life.
Oh, that's lovely.
I never end up dating someone I meet off of an app. I always meet in real life.
The apps is like…
But it happens.
You're so lucky. It does work for some people, but it just… I prefer to meet someone in real life. I just think it's such a special moment. And it's cute. And like, apps are so like superficial and transactional.
Hey, but
like,
you did the damn thing.
But we made it work because he just was himself right away.
Yeah.
And it just worked.
Yeah.
But I actually, before him, preferred… to message someone for a long time, I preferred the pen pal thing.
Oh God, you're sick.
I don't know why. Oh, okay. My logic was, first dates are hard. Mm-hmm. If you want, and I'm a busy gal at the time with two jobs. Mm-hmm. So for me to go on a first date with you, I want to get excited.
Yeah.
So like, what am I getting excited for? A blind date?
Okay, fair.
So I was like, I'm gonna put a full face of makeup on, and I'm gonna not do a show that night for you.
Okay, what I would have maybe done though.
Give me your notes.
Instead of doing the pen pal thing is like just have a call.
I should have done
or
that.
Or like a FaceTime instead of like having like a 6 week long.
Yes, I am so pro doing that. I should have done that. What I did was just I texted with these guys and I was like.
You're like, I'm built friendships.
I'm building anticipation. And it became a little sexy sometimes. Like,
well, that's kind of fun too.
Whatever. But, you know, flirty to make you excited for the first date. But I am so pro FaceTime.
Yeah.
Just do it. If you vibey, just do it.
Who cares?
Who cares?
If it's weird. You can't break a real deal.
No. And you can, you know, you can put on your makeup and do a little cute angle and make it cute. Like, who cares?
Because I don't want to waste my time going on a date if like it's just going to be a bomb.
Yeah.
Like, let's just figure this out right away.
Yeah.
That's how I talk about everything.
Because how many times do you bomb a date? Very often.
Yeah. It's just like, let's get this out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's already been an hour. Leslie Liao.
Oh my God.
As lovely as you are funny. Thank you for coming on the show.
And thank you for letting me do this. I love my new life.
Let her story inspire you guys. Go fucking do it.
Yeah, torture yourself.
Dude.
Stress yourself out.
Congratulations on everything. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.